Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Vicki Wernerton, founder of Expert Insights Family of Opportunity, home of Expert Insights Publishing, award-winning magazines, best-selling books, global communities, and broadcast. And I am so thrilled today because I have with me Linda Dyer. The best way to describe Linda is a winner. Linda wins in everything she undertakes. She has overcome many personal challenges within her own life, including totally defeating the debilitating lupus condition. Inspired by her own achievements, her passion in the education and empowerment of others, combined with her extensive experience and qualification, Linda's educational and motivated seminars and programs are always highly sought after. Linda's also a number one international best-selling and award-winning author, multiple books, and I'm just thrilled today, Linda, to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Linda, you have shared with me one of the most inspiring moments of your life, and what I'd like to do is just kind of turn it over to you so you can share this amazing story of how your wisdom and your intuition changed the lives of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people within the world. And if you could share with us now your most inspiring moment, I would love to hear it.
Well, yeah, thank you. It's really quite interesting because exactly 5 years ago, I flew into China, and what made me think about this story was the fact that just recently another earthquake has actually happened in China in the same province, and it made me go back to 5 years ago when I flew into China and the work I did with that original earthquake. I actually arrived in China on May 12 in 2008, and it was actually only a few hours after the earthquake. The earthquake happened at 2:28 p.m., and the reason why that's important is it's still celebrated today, that at that time people take a minute silence on the 12th of May at that time. People had felt the shockwaves all through Shanghai and as far north as Beijing. It was not only the talk of the town, but the talk of the whole of China. I could see it on, like in the taxis, they've got little TV stations, believe it or not, on the back of their chairs. And I could see it in English down the bottom, little bits about the earthquake. And I thought, gosh, this is quite huge. The loss of life, of course, was catastrophic, as was the whole villages, schools, everything was absolutely consumed by this monster in the middle of the day. Many of the parents actually complained that it wasn't the earthquake. In fact, it was the bad structuring of the buildings. They collapsed. And as we've just seen, the same thing happened in Bangladesh. I was actually in Shanghai at that point, and I'm going, wow, I'm here to train people in neuro-linguistic programming, but I think I'm here for a bigger purpose. And I don't know what made me get that thought, but it was such a real thought that I couldn't put it down. I was staying with the organizer of the training, Miss Hong Pan. She was amazing and became my dearest friend through this all. I met her in Australia when we were doing our NLP training. So this was my second trip to China as an NLP, neuro-linguistic programming trainer, because Hong was promoting me to the people there. The TV sets were everywhere, and they're all about talking about this earthquake. And then they started looking for coaches that could help people get through this catastrophic event. So I had a sudden thought at that point that here I was in Shanghai training people to become coaches, and that this would be an amazing experience for them to give their time under the guidance of me, and we could go together as a team and help these people get through this event. And I didn't think anything more of it than that's what we could do. So I took the opportunity of the class the next morning and asked Hong to listen to the radio in the taxi all the way to the class. It was really interesting because I wanted to know how many people in the group were going to be a part of it. I wanted to know what organisations could we go through to make this happen, because I didn't know the organisations in China. And who would be willing to translate a book that I had written called The Good Grief Book, which is now a beautiful little bestseller, and from English, obviously, over to Chinese. And my friend Hong, who had great language in both, she put her hand up and she said, you know what, I'm in and I'm going to help you translate the book. And I think my boyfriend will be able to help me do that and create it into a little Chinese book. So that was one thing out of the three already solved. I knew we could make it work, and our trainings and learnings became so purposeful every day. I wasn't only teaching and learning for ourselves, as we know we had a mission now to accomplish. Every day we were interested in the earthquake and what was happening. One of the students said to me, though, on the other side of the room, "How could you help? How can you help?" she said. "You don't even speak a word of Chinese." And I started to laugh and I went, oh my gosh, isn't it interesting how someone is so quick to tell someone else why they can't do something? And I found that fascinating, that she'd already worked out the circumstances of why I couldn't make something happen when in my mind it was absolutely a doer. It was really interesting. So we started to talk about body language right then and there, and how 55 to 75% of us is our body language, and my willingness to do this was very, very clear. So my 7% of language, which was not understanding Chinese, was not going to interfere, because I had Hong and I had other people, obviously, that we were going to attract that could use the Chinese language. Before I left Australia, I'd begun to write my new little book called The Law of Expectation, just after the Good Grief book. And I was really keen to get these little books out there and to have them in the world. And, of course, this was a great opportunity. So a second man on the day, on that same day, he showed me about, I saw these little things on the TV, and they were talking to people who had actually expected to survive the earthquake, and that was so inspirational. The first man that they showed, he actually showed that he found a bottle underneath the ground where he was, and he knew, I think it was a Coca-Cola bottle, and he pulled it gently out of the dirt, and he wanted to have some water, and he reached over in the underground and he grabbed the bottle and he actually urinated in it. And he actually had to drink his own urination. But you know what? He survived. They pulled him out of the ground 7 days later. And he survived because he took that law of expectation that I expect to live. And he took that, the same as I expected to help those people, he expected to help. And so I got inspiration from these people that they were interviewing. Another man on that day, when they pulled him out on day 8, he said, "I absolutely expected the Communist Party would rescue me." So here we are with this law of expectation. I expected to help, he expected to survive, and everything was happening. Both of these men were brilliant examples of the law of expectation. So I expected to continue with my work and my project, and I just raised it another notch. And so Hong and I worked tirelessly to bring this together. I came back to Australia and we still worked, her in China and me in Australia, getting links together. We worked till about 2 o'clock in the morning. And on Monday, the 19th of May, exactly 1 week later, the Chinese government asked everyone to stop at 2:28 and have 3 minutes of silence for the earthquake victims. At that point, being back in China with Hong, I was in a taxi coming back from a training. And I closed my eyes and I thought about what it would be like to be buried alive underground and not to know if you were going to survive or not. I visualized moving the dirt slowly away from my face to give me more air to breathe. The realization that over 100,000 people had gone through, had struck a chord with all of us, and the tears rolled down our face. Over 3 million people were now homeless. The death toll was rising dramatically every day. The taxi driver simply stopped his car and he put his head down. I watched the traffic police bow their heads with their hats taken off, and they cried like babies. people just stopped where they were in the street and became absorbed in their own thoughts around this catastrophic event. I feel this emotion in me as I write and read this story. It was a very moving time. It actually gave me more conviction to stick to my plan, as a whole nation was mourning here. I left Shanghai the following evening and I came back to Australia. We worked tirelessly day and night. We contacted people, we wrote proposals. We translated the Little Good Grief book into Chinese. We found sponsors, or we thought we could find sponsors, and that was more difficult than we thought at the time. We attracted graphic designers that helped put the books together, and we attracted people in Shanghai that could put the graphic designers' work together and the translations. After knockbacks from organisations who turned us down the opportunity to sponsor us, we kept going. We offered opportunity to the general population. We said, who would like to help us sponsor this beautiful book and get it into the earthquake zone? And the offers of donations came in. And the day the booklet arrived back from the printer, we still didn't have the full amount. But well, you know what? All we had was faith. We had an absolute belief that it would happen. And in 24 hours, we had a donation from Canadians, Australians, Chinese, and a German couple. We ran a business breakfast and put all that money in. And we asked people at an athletic gathering would they like to donate, and they just handed us money that we put into an envelope, and it all went into this little book. We were able to pay the printer 24 hours later when he called. That was an amazing thing for me, because I really got how faith brings you everything. And of course, action. Just applying for another visa from the Chinese embassy here, I was told that I couldn't go so often. Then I told them the work that I was doing over there and I gave them a copy of my book. I went to the embassy and found out that I required to put things immediately into action to make it happen. I had to have itineraries. I had to have accommodation that was booked. I had to have air tickets already purchased. I had to have letters from company that we'd be working with. And I went back to the embassy and the man recognized me and he smiled. He knew why I wanted to go back. He checked my paperwork. I gave him a copy of the book and he let me through. This was amazing because these were people that other people told me that just wouldn't happen. I flew back into China on Monday the 16th of June. Things were moving very quickly now. Word had got out about our project, and now Shanghai Radio was keen to interview us in English, as they had over 100,000 listeners who spoke English and Chinese. We were so excited because now it was starting to happen. The radio station interviewers were keen to learn more about how it was happening, and they could help Westerners, they said, helping Easterners with the grieving process. At the end of the day, we have made it the same self structure and we all have extremely similar basic wants and needs. So it never entered my head that this would be difficult. There were too many similarities in my mind to think that it could be hard work. With a psychology background, the actual radio interviewer wanted to continue discussing with me way after the interview because he thought our thinking was very, very interesting. We had also received offers from a company near the earthquake zone who wanted us to train the staff in the management program around stress because a lot of their staff weren't coping and obviously weren't working because people around them had died and they didn't know how to get through it. Three of us, Hong from Shanghai, the Yak from Germany and myself from Australia, all flew out of Shanghai on Wednesday the 18th of June to Chengdu, laden with good grief books, so many books that we couldn't even pick them up. The man at the airport told us the luggage was so overweight. Again, telling him what we were going to do, he allowed us to go through. We invited voluntary organisational leaders to come and meet with us to see what we could do. Everything was coming into action. And one leader by the name of June Wang was so happy about what we intended to do with the book that we wanted to give out, that she went away from a meeting very excited, not promising anything, but offering us hope. She told us of the many security checks we would have to go through, but nothing was going to dampen my enthusiasm and the enthusiasm of others. She had organised with another voluntary worker in the tent city area to take us to the school where only 100 children were alive after 17,000 people were buried in that town alone. The car trip, you can imagine, was just an eye-opener. Tents were right along the sides of the road. People were too afraid to not be on the road because that was the most stable ground. You've got to imagine they had 10 to 20 days of aftershocks, almost as big as the earthquake. People were living on the footpaths. You had an immediate sense of the effect this was still having on the residents in the outskirt areas. The driver told us of all the many stories of life after the earthquake. He told us of many nights that he didn't sleep until he was so tired that he had to. He slept with fear, not wanting to wake up, because many nights the collapsing of buildings had killed most of the people. He told us of the buildings shaking and moving. He told us of 10,000 aftershocks, none of which have been below the Richter scale of 4. He told us of the arm on a statue was moving so much one night he thought the statue was waving at him. He thought he was hallucinating. He told us that this not being through himself, but what he had witnessed, and bodies were everywhere, parts of bodies, limbless bodies. There was more than he could ever imagine. We were really stunned and in our own thoughts for most of that trip, as you can imagine, looking out the windows, looking down, but hearing intently to his amazing stories. We finally visited the earthquake zone, only to find that the children we wanted to visit were at lunch. So we found a place to eat. We found a hotel, believe it or not, that had so much evidence that they'd been affected by the earthquake. But you know what? This is the difference in people's attitude. This guy went, you know what? Business as usual. And he had some of the nicest food. He'd set up tents in the backyard around the cracked buildings. I admired his tenacity. I really admired. And you know what? His place was absolutely full. We continued with so many stories over lunch. The driver ended up joining us. It was time to go and distribute the books, and we were driven to the opening of the tent city, where a volunteer army uniform guy came up and he had to check us out. And this is where my friend Hong, who lives in China, said, "We are not going to get through. We are not going to get through." I said, "Hong, we can only get through if we all have the faith. We only need a teaspoon of fear to stop this. And I want you now to have the faith because I absolutely believe we are going to get through this." You can just imagine this guy at the front of our car. He's got the little good grief book in his hand in Chinese, and he's flipping through the book. And I could hear him thinking. But at no time did I lose the faith. I mean, this was an army checkpoint. How could a lady from Australia get through an army checkpoint in China? I had no fear of anything whatsoever. I just knew we needed to do this. He said, "I am going to regret this." And he raced around the front of the car and he jumped in the car with the little book and he said, "I'm going to take you to the earthquake zone." Wow. And I just nudged my friend from China and I said, "That's faith." He was so impressed with our mission that he didn't even hesitate. He drove through with so much devastation, so many buildings that were standing, that weren't standing anymore, maybe just the front gatepost. We drove on where there were only half of what used to be there. We drove past trucks that carried hundreds of panels for the displaced housing that was now being erected. We drove past husbands and wives carrying a piece of wood over their shoulders with so much rubble that was weighing them down, because that's the only way they could get the rubble away. It's a bit different here in Australia, and I'm sure it's a lot different in America. We drove through some of the most rural and the most beautiful farmlands I have ever seen. We drove through mountains that had been scarred by falling debris and earthquakes. We drove through villages, a whole kindergarten that was simply rubble now. The children were just crushed to death. We passed houses. We passed all sorts of different things. Children buried alive, people trying to survive. We arrived at the roadside near a makeshift school called the Xinquan Village. We walked up a mud track and we came to a flat, muddy area that was covered, believe it or not, in straw. A Chinese lady from the village came out to hug me and chatted away in China like I was her long-lost friend. You talk about body language. I knew nothing of what she was saying, and yet I knew everything. army tent surrounded this muddy play-assembled area with tables and chairs. Under a canopy of makeshift classrooms, tents from the army, volunteers, teachers, police and children. There was a voluntary band that had come all the way from Hong Kong to entertain this little group. And we decided on that day this was going to be a birthday party. A birthday party for the rest of these children's lives. And my book, my little good grief book that we'd lugged all the way, was going to be the birthday present for these children. I was shocked to see only 100 children from ages 4 to 14. That was all that was left out of the 2,000 that used to be there, a stark reminder of how many people they lost. The children were put into rows, the big kids at the back and the little kids at the front. It was so cute. Only a half a dozen of kids that looked numb at the ages of 4. Who knows what was going on in their minds? I kept thinking, what's going on in your little mind? How much have you absorbed? How much did you see? Teachers and volunteers were spread around the group. The teachers had tears running down their faces. What did they witness? What did they see? We can only imagine. The band began to play, and it was interesting because I knew all the songs because they were the same songs we sing here in Australia. So I'm starting to sing them in English. And I started to remember that if I take my eyes over to the left and recall the words, I could remember all the words to these little songs. So on that day, I sang really loudly, but I sang in English, and the kids that were learning English started to join me. Music was just, it tied everyone together. It was wonderful. And then the band played a really sad song. One of the great things that happened on that day was one policeman at the back. He started to put all the actions to the songs, and he was asked to come to the front. Two other police joined in, and they had the children laughing, and was probably the first time they'd laughed in a long time. The next song had the children doing actions, and the air was light, and this happy moment, like everyone had forgotten what had happened in such a short period of time. The band sang songs and were giving, receiving love, and the children were asked to come up and shake hands with the volunteers and the rest of them. One little four-year-old girl left the group, and she came over and hugged us. I will never forget that moment, because just before that, I now can see the power of thought. I'm sitting there in the line of police and army and the ladies that came with me, and I'm sending out a thought to this little girl. And I'm saying, I don't know why you were spared, but I know you were spared, and you were spared for a reason. You're going to be such an amazing lady in the future for this country. And you know that Chinese don't tend to hug. Well, this little girl left the line and came over and hugged me, and I will never, ever forget it. Ever. The tears began from everyone. Some of the teachers wept openly, and I remember a little girl going up to the teacher and wiping the teacher's eyes to give her courage. Male teachers wept openly, as did the police, the volunteers and the villagers. They needed to have this emotional release as much as they needed the happiness. Volunteers were going around asking the adults to be strong for the children. I found this very moving, and I shed many tears at this time. All of a sudden, party hats came out. Large cakes were brought in that were decorated. And if you remember at that time, it was very close to the Olympic Games. So these cakes came out as the five rings of the Olympics. The police brought the cakes with them. And none of us even knew, isn't it interesting, that the police had bought the cakes, I'd bought the books, and we all knew it was going to be a party for continuing and moving forward, but no one had spoken. The children took a while to move their emotions from sadness to loss to the joy of moving on. I felt the loss of the children and the teachers. We then became actively involved in cutting the cakes up and singing happy birthday for the rest of their lives. The head teacher also said very thank you in his limited English. What a special man he was. These children are blessed to have him. I watched him cradle a crying boy with his head and giving him love, and he just moved around. He would also smile as the children turned their heads openly to let out their emotions. He then did some very unexpected things. He started to paint my face with the cream of the leftover cake. I have pictures of it. He painted other faces. He then smashed cake into our faces. and he got the children laughing. And he turned round to the children and he said, "Do you know what? You may never be able to ever do this in your life, but I'm going to tell you right now, you can take some cake that's left over, and I want you to go and throw it at the police and throw it at the security people and throw it at the army." And he said, "Just go." And it was just like a change of mood. It was the most wonderful thing. So the children took this cake and they just started throwing it. And then they came back and washed their hands and we handed out the books. Everyone wanted a book, including the people from the village. At this time, people from the village were coming up everywhere. The teachers assured them that they would go through the book in their classrooms. All of a sudden, the children were back in their rooms and we were all leaving. It just happened so quickly. Our driver and volunteer helped us down the slope, and my little Chinese friend, who insisted on carrying my handbag, she spoke to me all the way back to the car in Chinese and showed me houses now looking like rubble. It was like I could understand everything as she pointed out the houses with her gestures, explaining that that was all that was left. She then wanted her picture taken with me, as did one of the volunteer teachers. We said our goodbyes and we're on our way. We then took this amazing volunteer back to the headquarters at Tent City. His boss was so upset with him for being away so long. He said he enjoyed it all and believed he didn't care what happened to him now. He absolutely believed in what we did and he was so glad he could get us through the Chinese army. He told us he had given us all his money that he earns, he gives to the earthquake victims. So we offered him money. We offered him money that we had to also give to the earthquake victims. But he said he couldn't take it because he wanted to keep everything ethically high. And, you know, there could be words spoken about money that was given to him. It was heavenly just going through that process. We watched a little girl copying the actions of an army guard. And then they both fell into laughter. That never happens. I remember copying the actions of a guard when I went to Italy and also when I went to England to see the Queen, and none of them burst into laughter. But on this day, the guard absolutely fell into laughter with this little girl. We saw people playing games and table tennis like it was just time to move on. This was a massive tent city that we had arrived back to. He asked the girls to give out our books to those who needed it most. The girls behind the desk read it immediately, which pleased us very much. It was a huge day with mixed feelings of getting our book out to the people who needed it most and the emotions of what they had been through. My head ached with the pain for the loss these people had been through, from holding back the emotions felt by the whole experience. Back at the hotel, I rested my head and I thought about the whole day, while my two colleagues, Hong and Biat, had got renewed energy. They'd received information from a French NLP student. There was an owner in a pub in the town that had lots of contacts. And off they went on another mission to disseminate as many books as possible. The next day we were to catch a train to the Alcatel staff. And they wanted us to train them in the processes of getting through grief. We went to a place called the Bookworm in the town. And so they could help us get more books out. We found that a man had already sold lots of books and he'd raised over 300,000 RMB and he'd given it to the Earthquake Appeal. The inspiration from what we had done had inspired so many, from little girls at 4 years of age to whole villages to people that were now doing things. And more importantly, it inspired us because we had taken on the fact that you can have one idea and you could absolutely make it happen. And that the universe will never, ever give you an idea you can't get involved with. The training the next day at the Alcatel, it absolutely took place. And people, the aha moments in that training were just profound. We gave everybody at that training a good grief book. We gave them a workbook that I had designed all night in my room. And we allowed them to also move on. We were inspiring people. We also gave everyone at that training an A, the letter A, as a winner. And we said, all you've got to do now is keep it. I had used this tactic before in the prisons, and it absolutely works. We asked them to imagine that they were an A worker and that all they had to do was keep working at that level and they would completely remain to be at that A level. And you know what? They would then influence family members, other work members and their own children. We set future goals together and we wrote out action plans of things that they could do. The best part was when they answered their own questions. It was like light bulbs going off in their minds. They wanted us to have a group photo with their A's and we told them we would look forward to stories and accomplishments that they would continue to have and keep, and they would be inspiring other people to keep their A. We were driven back to the airport and we flew back to Shanghai. We were pleased to find out that the little good grief booklets were now in schools, villages, bookshops and a pub with volunteers sending it out. On the next day, we all got together for lunch and we invited anyone and everyone that wanted to join us. The lady from Beijing Media came and saw us and spoke to us about going up there and doing some work up there. And you know what was most important? That lady from Germany that told me I couldn't do it because I didn't speak a word of Chinese. She not only joined us on the tour, she was so inspirational in making things happen. She was the one that went to the bookworm and got the contacts from there. And 2 years on, after training her in NLP, she became a confidence coach. And Hong Pan went on to become Hong Pan Consulting. These people were inspired. And the other thing that really got me about this was together we inspired so many. It's not that we have to do it on our own. We attract other people that want to make it happen. We put events together and we raised a lot of money to continually get this book out. Over 5,000 books ended up going out through the earthquake zone. It was so amazing. And I then got a phone call, and it was from Roger Hamilton from Wealth Dynamics. And he said, I'm so inspired by your story. I'd like you to write your story up in an international magazine. And I wrote this story for this international audience. And all of a sudden, the next phone call came and he said, now I would like you to come and speak to an international audience in Hong Kong and tell them of your story. It was very emotional, as it is today, 5 years on. But it's emotional because I believe that when we're inspired to do something, when we're given an idea from the universe, we must put it out there. We must make it happen. All we need to do is have faith and have action, and we can make it happen. So I go back to my beliefs of you must decide. You see, I decided that I would help. You must act. We took action. We must believe, and that means you have to have faith. And then you must expect, just like those two guys that survived 7 and 8 days later, with expectation, everything comes together and it brings it to you. I'm so grateful for this opportunity, and I'm so grateful for the inspiration that I had in myself and the inspiration that these people had and what that little book still today does, how it inspires people. And thank you, Vicky, for the opportunity to share it.
Oh, Linda, the pleasure is all mine. You are amazing, and you open the doors for people to see that anything is possible with the right intent, and you are filled with so much wisdom and so much of the right intent. I so appreciate you being here with us. I so appreciate also that you will be in our upcoming book, Ready, Aim, Inspire, featuring Neil Donald Walsh, yourself and Joe Vitale and many others who have so much to offer in the way of inspiration for the world. So, Linda, thank you so much. This was so moving. If someone would like to learn more about you and your work, do you have a website where they could go?
Look, I absolutely do. If they go onto the website, www.mindpowerglobal.com.au, they can find out lots more information. They can see the Little Good Grief book there and the other book Wounded Survived Right, that Vicky also worked with to make a bestseller. They can also see my work and, of course, all the coachings and the NLP trainings. And I travel the world, so I'm happy to reconnect with people as I move around. I've just come back from Canada and have been invited to go back, and it looks like we're doing a world tour in September, October this year. So I can connect with a lot of people by doing that, which would be wonderful.
Yes, and you'll be joining us in Albuquerque, New Mexico for
Absolutely.
Our extravaganza and book awards that will be October 3rd through 5th. So, Linda, one more time, just give your website so everyone is going to be able to avail themselves of the resources there.
Yes, it's www.mindpowerglobal.com.au.
Wonderful. Linda, thank you so much. It's just beyond even the word joy to spend time with you, and today was no exception. I'm so thrilled to be able to introduce you to our audience, our readers and our listeners, and if anyone would like to learn more about Expert Insights, you can go to getei.com, that's G-E-T-E-I.com, and everyone have a wonderful week.